Hello, I'm Tom Weber. Thanks for listening to NPR News here on the radio or online or on our podcast. Coming up, we're going to have a quiz. These are the questions you have to know the answers to if you're an immigrant trying to become a citizen. The questions you don't necessarily have to know the answer to if you're born in the U.S. I want you to call in. I'll ask a question to see how you do. But I also want to hear your experience. Maybe you took this test. Maybe you were part of a naturalization ceremony recently and you had to take this test as part of the citizenship process. I'd love some insight as to how all of that played out as well. That's all coming up. I want to hear from you at that point. But first, we're going to have a conversation here about open government and open records. Might not be something you think about a lot, but it's really out there all the time. One of the more interesting sites to read about how our local governments work here in Minnesota and don't work belongs to a freelance software engineer who made open government his passion project. Let me give you a sense of how much Tony Webster is into this topic. This is a recent tweet of his, quote, "Please celebrate America by sending a FOIA request, not shooting off fireworks at 11:30 p.m. FOIA being the Freedom of Information Act. Tony also recently won an award from Minnesota's Society of Professional Journalists group for his work on First Amendment issues. He's actually in court as well over one particular effort that we'll talk about. He's going to start a new nonprofit on this as well. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm glad you're here. Questions this hour, 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1, and please don't call or text if you're driving. We were talking before the mics went on here, Tony, about how there are, you know, you have the usual suspects, reporters and journalists who are always making data requests. Hey, give me these files. I want to see these emails, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's the population of people who aren't necessarily employed by one of the mainstay media companies, but for whom this is a real passion. I could name about three or four people here in the Twin Cities who are really into this. How does that come about? How does that happen?
Yes. You know, a lot of reporters do use our Freedom of Information Law, but I think that, you know, everyone should. You know, we all, you know, live around other people. We have things going on in our neighborhoods, and sometimes we have questions about it. And maybe a journalist isn't asking those questions. Mm-hmm. And you can ask those questions yourself. You know, you can send in a request if you have questions about what your government is doing for you. And I encourage people to do that and to get involved. For me, you know, I saw that even, you know, public officials didn't have access to a lot of records themselves to help them make decisions. And so that's one of the reasons I got involved and started doing this kind of work.
Is that related? I think you had an internship. You were working at Minneapolis City Hall.
My first actual request was, you know, because the city council didn't have access to records on violations by like towing and booting companies. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, getting frustrated on the inside, I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to just send this request and get that out of myself because that's what the law says I can do.
So you were working for the city government. You couldn't get the data.
Yes.
So you made a data request.
Well, after I left my internship. Yeah.
Then
I made a request. But what's funny is a lot of, you know, state and local, you know, government employees reach out to me saying, you know, hey, there's a lot of politics within government. I can't get this stuff to do my job. Like, mm-hmm. I think you should look into it. So, there's a lot of internal politics in government and they don't really have access to their own records sometimes.
What do you think is going on? You've had experience a little bit on the one side, more on the other side. I think you've used the phrase wall of secrecy and things like that before. Is it that, or is it really just that sometimes governments are big and they don't know how to do this? You know what I mean?
It's a combination of both. I mean, I think if you, you know, were to ask questions the government doesn't mind answering, you might get a fast response from them. But when you start asking things that might embarrass them or things that they don't want to be public, that's when, you know, those things that you might see in government, like bureaucracy and things like that, are really kind of an excuse for secrecy in those cases. And that's what I kind of ran into with the Hennepin County Sheriff. And, you know, I was looking into whether or not, you know, government around the Twin Cities and the state were using biometric technologies, which can, you know, track your face or your your iris on your eyes. And for the most part, the answer was no. And I heard from a lot of different agencies right away, like, we don't use this technology, or, you know, we did a little trial, but we're not doing it. But Hennepin County Sheriff Stanek's office just, like, wouldn't respond to me. And when they would, they just kept, you know, stonewalling me with, like, we're processing your request over and over for 3.5 months. Mm-hmm. And finally, they say, your request is too burdensome for us to comply with. It's going to take us 10,000 hours of work, 15 months of work to comply with this. And I'm like, well, you know, I've used email before, but also as a software engineer, I know it's not that hard to search your email.
Because that's what you were asking for. You were asking for emails.
I was asking for records and emails, and they said that it was the email search that was going to take 15 months of 24-hour-a-day work. And I'm like, no way. And I said, but, you know, I want to see some records. So, like, I'll limit this. Let's work together to make this happen. And I didn't hear from them. And so I ended up suing them. And I did ultimately win. You know, once they were under oath and on the stand, they said, well, it's not actually 10,800 hours. It's 18 hours. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's really hard to sue government to go up against them to get records. And, you know, not many people do it because it costs a lot of money. It takes a lot of time. I'm lucky to have pro bono attorneys. But, you know, if I didn't have pro bono attorneys, it would cost, you know, $100,000 to go through, you know, all this work.
And the reason we're talking about this particular example is because this is actually a case that is going to go before the Minnesota Supreme Court.
Yes.
Basically, to answer the question of what can you have these data?
Well, you know, it's a really weird question, which is it valid to ask government for emails by topic or keyword? Which is a really strange question.
Wow.
Like, well, you know, if, you know, I kind of use the example of the Flint water crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone around the nation was asking, you know, questions in, you know, it's Michigan, a different state, but everyone was asking questions and they say, I want records about, you know, the Flint water system. But to think that that's not a valid request when you say, I want records about X, you know, that's kind of how it works. Like, I say what I'm interested in and you give it to me. Like, that's how it works. And to say that that's not valid, and they've kind of come up with arguments saying, like, well, you're asking us to do research services for you. And so the Supreme Court will be looking at all of this. And it's kind of a big case because we haven't really had a lot of, you know, in this electronic records area, we really haven't had a lot of cases that have covered this. But for this one, I mean, I won at the trial court, I won at the Court of Appeals, and so now we're at the Supreme Court, and I'm you know, hoping we get the same outcome.
Yeah, I mean, the basic hope there is that the concept of, I am interested in seeing my government's records about topic A, therefore I'm going to ask them to give me documents about topic A, it sounds like. And we're getting a little granular here, but this is really interesting because I think a lot of requests, especially from the journalist side of things, are exactly that. They're exactly about, send me anything you got on topic A.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, they've said, you know, well, we don't store our emails into a million different folders for each word in the English dictionary, so we can't search our email. And I just, you know, it's just, you know, banging my head against the table because it's like, this is really not that hard to just search your email. I mean, how could you do an HR investigation within the county? And it's also, you know, the topic of this request was on some, you know, high-tech, high-dollar surveillance equipment. To think that you can spend all this money buying this equipment, but you don't know how to search your email? And you know, the concerning part for me is this fight has been going on for almost 2 years now. I don't think it will be done until probably early next year. And they were discussing using some of this technology at the Super Bowl. Well, by the time this is all done, you know, my request won't be relevant.
Yeah.
And to think that, you know, when reporters go asking questions that, you know, they can just be bogged down in frivolous appeals and get delayed and never get the records. I mean, then we don't have accountability.
This show is not about biometrics, but just in about 30 seconds, explain what it is you're thinking about. What is it that you are wondering whether law enforcement are using? How would they use biometrics the Super Bowl?
You know, we've seen on shows like CSI where, you know, police can match faces, and that's not a surprise, but they were actually discussing putting it on surveillance cameras owned by government and scanning faces in real time as you walk down the street, whether you're suspected of a crime or not. And we don't have any laws on that in Minnesota. And that was one of the reasons that I was interested in this, is the legislature deserves to know. And they didn't find out about, you know, Stingray and then cell phone interception equipment until people made Freedom of Information requests. And this is kind of the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what my interest was. And I found they were having discussions. But I did not expect it to turn into what it has.
I think you have some paperwork for this case due this week and all of it. I mean, you're knee deep into all of this now.
Yeah, my brief is due Friday, and I think that you know, maybe we'll be done end of this year, early next year. But and it's a big case, and lots of other organizations on both sides are coming to the table. You know, national sheriffs groups on their side and media groups on my side. Mm-hmm. A lot of journalists. So yeah, a lot of eyes are on this case.
I think there is a disclaimer. I'm pretty sure NPR is involved as well. So I have to check that. I think we have filed on behalf of you.
Yes, NPR filed a brief supporting just the position of accessing.
So that is some disclosure as well. As I talked to Tony Webster here, who has his own website, TonyWebster.com, and he just blogs and writes about all of these data requests that he makes, and he's caught the eye of the more mainstream journalists as well, I must say, because he's won some awards from some local groups here. And in fact, here, he won an award. I'm just going to shower some praise on you here. The Coalition on Government Information said you use state open records law, quote, with a rigor that rivals and often supersedes that of professional journalists and researchers. Your questions here for Tony Webster, 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. So are you coming at this, you know, you have a day job and then you do this as well. Are you coming at this from the perspective of, I'm not seeing the journalists I listen to or read doing this, therefore I will? I mean, is it that we're falling down on the job?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, I think that there's always fresh news coming in and a lot of journalists, you know, are hopping to the next story. There are some great journalists who do stay on top of things, but for the most part, you know, government will deny requests and delay and hope that you go away, whether you're a member of the public or a journalist. And that gets really frustrating. So, I mean, I think part of it's been that I've stuck with it. But, you know, I don't blame journalists for getting frustrated at it. But, I mean, I encourage more people to, and especially more journalists, to stay on top of it when you get told no, you know, get help, you know, if your station has an attorney or something, you know, get them involved. Don't just take it and accept it.
I think there's this argument of the golden age of journalism if it's happening because someone like Tony Webster can decide, I care a lot about this issue on biometrics. You know, maybe the newspaper or maybe public radio has done a couple stories on it, but I want to go farther down. So I'm going to dive that deep. And so you actually have more people, you know, we get philosophical about what is a journalist, but then you start doing that work.
Yeah. I mean, you can't just rely on press releases that come out of, you know, law enforcement as true. You hope they are true because you trust them. But, you know, what I want to see is like, what are their actual discussions about within the office? You know, what are some of their contacts with vendors? And I mean, it's a lot of work and you're digging through a lot of paper or emails, but you really get a good insight into what's actually happening.
Let's take some calls here now. John is on the phone for Tony Webster here in Plymouth. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Tony. Glad you're able to do this show. I think it's important for accounting and transparency in the state. Just as a quick background, I use open records laws for my company out here in Plymouth, and we've taken litigation at the federal level. We've gone that far. So, Tony, my heart goes out to you. I know what you're up against. What I wanted to add is a comment and then just leave it to you two to discuss if you can, please. What I'm observing here is this appears to be a case of an entity, an agency, that's willfully evading the law. I looked at the case and I see that, for example, some of the emails that Tony found, the county apparently was writing them in a way that you purposely could not find them if they did a search. And then, of course, you see Sheriff Stanek's change in email retention policy. So I'd like to just hear some discussion about the whole idea of here you have the state and the county and the cities wrapping themselves in, oh, it's too hard, it's a burden. But to my professional assessment, again, this is what we do. We do thousands of these. It appears like an agency that is willfully going out of its way to avoid complying with the law.
I agree. I think the email you're referring to is actually
and by the way, we're back on the Hennepin County case.
Yes, this is the Hennepin County Sheriff. You know, when I asked for emails regarding biometric technologies, mm-hmm. and I included some vendor names, one of them was this product called IBIS, which is a little fingerprint scanner that police can carry around with them. And I was interested in how that was being used. Well, I actually found that they had scrambled the letters in IBIS to like SIIB instead of IBIS, and then made some joke about being proud of the fact that they scrambled the letters so that they wouldn't end up reading the email on the internet. So they're kind of flouting, you know, our transparency laws by when they're talking about something, they're purposely scrambling it or not saying specific things to avoid finding emails. And so, you know, it's kind of a question of, you know, as Sheriff Stanek sort of fights this, you know, you can't ask for topics or keywords. You know, well, they're also scrambling letters so that even if I do ask for topics or keywords, I'm not going to find those emails. And so to think about it is really mind-boggling. But, you know, I think we don't have sufficient laws to enforce the law, and that it ends up where I just have to take their word, and they're not particularly forthcoming.
Well, it's interesting, and we've gone a little more down the rabbit hole on this one case than I expected we would. So I think what we'll also do, we're going to make a request, and we'll invite Sheriff Stanek to come on and talk about this as well, because it's an interesting topic. You're kind of doing two things at once. You're making the case or making the point that writ large, this general topic of biometrics isn't really covered in state law, ergo, hey, state lawmakers, if you're listening, you should maybe think about getting in on this policy and setting some frameworks. But you're actually more on the open government, should I be able to have these data questions and the answers, et cetera,
and maybe not intentionally. You know, I thought that this would be a really simple, like, I ask for records, I'd like to see them. And it kind of turned into this huge Supreme Court fight that I did not want. and we see all these, you know, government lobbyists coming to the table essentially fighting for what they've been lobbying for at the Capitol for so many years, you know, a burden exception in the law. And, you know, in court, we found, you know, that it wasn't actually burdensome, but they're still saying, you know, well, we want a burden exception. So they're kind of using this case to try to get everything that they haven't gotten from the legislature.
Well, what is the law say about if you make a request that is too burdensome, is that an okay reason not to fulfill the request?
Well, that's a great question. You know, they can take longer if the request is bigger. So if you ask for a lot of data, they have to respond reasonably and promptly, but that's tempered by how much data you ask for. So, you know, if someone does make a huge request, you know, they can take more time to fulfill it. And oftentimes, you know, government will use the excuse of, well, someone came in and they asked to see everything. Mm-hmm. Well, chances are you start to give them some stuff and they'll walk away. But, you know, in this, I didn't actually ask for that much, and it was really hard to get, you know, the records I was interested in. So I don't think the burden is a real issue. And when it is, I think that state law already accounts for that.
What is, though, the responsibility by you or a journalist or the person asking for the data to make sure that we take a moment to remember that there are human beings on the other end of this request who have to pour through stuff and get the data? I mean, what about, I've talked to some elected officials who get the request, right, who say, I want every single email you've ever sent or received in this, in the time you've been in office. Well, that seems simple on the surface, but you have to go through every email because some of that information should be redacted for various legal reasons. And I think even you would agree that that should be redacted. So some of these elected officials, they only have one or two staffers and they have to be part of it. I mean, where is the responsibility on the person asking the request to be responsible in how they're asking?
Absolutely. You know, a request should be as narrow as possible to get what you're actually looking for. But one of the reasons that you have to be broader is because government will often use, you know, the narrowness of a request and say, well, you know, let's look for excuses to not give someone something. Well, you know, does this record actually perfectly match the request? Well, no, so we don't have to give it. But, you know, in 100% of cases when government has said, you know, hey, we think that there's an opportunity to reduce the scope, like, I always want to work with them because that means I get to see the records faster. And it, you know, reduces the burden on them, which is great. But in this, you know, in Hennepin specifically, they just weren't interested in that conversation.
One of the other people, when you think about the Tony Websters of the world, people out there working on this topic, open government, open records. Another name for people here in the Twin Cities that comes to mind is Rich Neumeister, who tweets as much as Tony Webster, I think, as well. And he's out there on this topic and he's on the phone. So, Rich, I'm glad you were listening and called in. And I'd love to hear your thoughts here this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. I appreciate all the things that Mr. Webster is doing. And he's also bringing a lot of young people involved, you know, people who are knowledgeable about the law, who have a passion to find out about more things about government. But the third thing is knowing a lot about the technology. I mean, I'm a, as I've said, I'm an old man, doing some of this, but you know, it's only been in the last several years that I've gotten more on social media and writing things about and all that. So I just, my hat's off to Mr. Webster and a lot of the peers that are working with him on a lot of stuff. My question is, Mr. Webster, if you can share with the audience, why is it important for the average person to know about this law, data practices and freedom of information laws, and how it relates to their own lives in different ways? And as you know, the caveat with our own law is that we can find out about information about ourselves, particularly when government does things to us, other than just to find out what's happening to the public. So if you can share your perspective in that regard, I'd appreciate it.
Thanks, Rich.
Absolutely. You know, I think that there might be a lot of people in the metro area that are interested in this sort of thing, but in outstate rural Minnesota, when I've made requests, oftentimes, you know, government doesn't really know how to handle it because no one's asking those questions. But, you know, when something affects your life greatly, like, ask those questions. If you're from a small town, you know, you have the right to do that, and you can really make changes. I mean, some of this work has resulted in the legislature taking up new issues and discussing it. You know, whether or not the legislature is effective at the end of the day is a different issue. But mm-hmm. they talk about it, and we have seen changes in law that were only possible because people asked these questions, and those people weren't necessarily journalists.
How much of this also, Rich made the point that you're younger than he is, and so you... And you're a software guy, by the way, so you know some of the intricacies of how this works, and I'm sure you're well aware of how some local governments and county governments and state governments have wide variety of the computers and software and hardware they use, and some of it's still pretty old, and it's amazing that it's still running, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
How do you navigate the possibility that they're not really trying to hide it from you? They're legitimately using the oldest stuff possible. Funding isn't adequate, and it really would take 10,000 hours, maybe not in this one case with Hennepin County, but it really would take 10,000 hours because it's just an old piece of machinery.
Sure. Usually that's not the case, but you know, the law does require, it states very clearly that government has to keep records easily accessible for convenient use, and that's been the law for decades. And what technology should be doing is making, you know, records, emails, files easier to access. I mean, we've seen improvements in just how we can search our computers and emails. Mm-hmm. Government is getting those same benefits. But when they're making technology decisions for what to purchase, they should be thinking about this law and thinking about public access. And that was actually a question we asked in my litigation is, did you consider the law when choosing your systems? And there was kind of an awkward pause because, you know, they didn't really think about it. So
what is the general – do we have laws? Do we have good policy in this state about whether – I mean, maybe there's a local city council member listening or a local county board member in greater Minnesota, and they don't actually know, hey, if I send an email or get an email on my government county email address, is there a policy about how long I have to keep it? Is there a policy about how to archive it? How do we set that up in Minnesota?
Sure. So right now that's really different for every government agency, how they choose to do it. We do have our Official Records Act, which does require some records to be kept for a period of time. But right now, you know, after my lawsuit, the Hennepin County Sheriff actually decided we're only going to keep emails for 30 days. And we've seen government agencies sort of say we're going to keep things for less and less time. But I've never seen anything as short as 30 days. Mm-hmm. And that's why the legislature this last session took up discussing a 3-year retention period. Because, you know, 30 days, by the time you learn of something and ask a question, all those discussions are gone. So, I mean, for them, ask questions of the record staff and you know, in a lot of government agencies, they don't actually have a policy. It's just whatever some IT person set up. So they should make sure that they have those policies.
So if it's 30 days, they just wipe it after 30 days so that if you make the request on day 31, they can just say, well, we don't have those emails anymore.
It's gone. And I mean, with so much that government does over email these days, you know, that's really troubling because you just don't know what government is doing. And sort of finding out what government is doing in terms of policies and procedures is going to be one of the topics of the nonprofit I'm working on starting, which is called Governage, mm-hmm. and just going around to different counties and cities and finding out, you know, what are your policies? Have you thought about this? And I've done some of the research so far, and the results are not very good. So,
do you give people the benefit of the doubt? Are they not good because it's just not on people's radar, or are they not good because they're bad people?
No, they're not bad people. It's not on their radar. Some of the policies haven't been updated since the 80s, and the law says it has to be updated every year. And there's just, you know, no one advocating for that, and especially small towns. And so I think, and you know, that's what the law says. So I think bringing this, you know, to the radar of legislators and, mm-hmm. and making sure that people are aware that like this stuff matters. I mean, not just for freedom of information, but also privacy, because, you know, government is collecting a lot more information about people. And if they're not thinking about privacy and security, you know, there's been data breaches in the news. They're not protected against that. So they really need to be thinking about all aspects of data practices. And that's what our law is, the Data Practices Act.
So you're, and the nonprofit's not exactly up and running quite yet. It's called GovRidge, but you're planning to use that nonprofit to what? Be a barnstormer and tour the state and set up panel discussions and things like that?
Not just the state. I'm interested in state laws around the country, but one of the things is making it easier for the general public and journalists to enforce their rights. And so, you know, collecting the policies of these government entities and collecting, you know, case law and research that's been done. There's, you know, we don't have any, there's no, you know, police department in the state or whatever that goes around making sure that government is, you know, complying with the law. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of, you know, a point of doing this nonprofit is to, you know, make sure that these laws are being complied with. There's no one else doing it.
Two more questions for you, Tony Webster here, and then we'll let y'all. You gave this, you won this award recently at an event I was at with the Society of Professional Journalists. You actually talked during your speech a little bit about a little issue you have when you hear a journalist doing a story or you're reading a story, and the story says such and such happened, blank, blank, blank. Documents obtained by this organization show blank, blank, blank. And you don't like that phrase. Why?
Well, you know, I see a lot of journalists say, you know, we obtained documents exclusively and things like that. But, well, you sent a freedom of information request and government complied with it. I want journalists and reporters to say when they're using our laws, because if you don't say you're using it, the mm-hmm. public and legislators won't hear that it's actually effective. There's so many stories that we only have because the law works. And if journalists don't talk about it, people forget about it. And I also think that journalists need to talk about when their requests are delayed or denied. We don't often hear those, but it happens a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, if you do a story, but, you know, you were delayed 6 months of doing the story because you kept getting delays and denials, like, yeah. Report that.
You want the story to say, instead of saying documents obtained by, you want to say, thanks to a freedom of information request or a data practices request, we got these documents. And you also want the story to say we waited 6 months through delays to get these documents.
Yes, and we don't see that too often. I've seen a couple of stories where, you know, they do the story they were going to do, but then at the end they sort of dedicate a little bit of time to talking about how much they had to go through to get the story. And I think that's very valuable.
For people listening who, I don't know, they want to know something. How do they do this? How do you get this information, Tony? What do you do?
Sure. So, I mean, the law is you know, anyone can use it. In Minnesota, we have the Data Practices Act federally. We have the Freedom of Information Act. Every state has one of these laws. And you can use it by sending a request. You know, one of the things I'm going to work on with the nonprofit is sort of making you know, sample requests and pointing out what works and doesn't, mm-hmm. and if you get denied, what can you do about it? So, I mean, that's one of the key things that I want to make this more accessible to people, because not many people really want to open up the statute books and start reading that.
Yeah. So, but in general, if I want to know about parking tickets in my town,
you can ask that, and you can ask, you know, any question you'd like. If you want to know if you know, certain neighborhoods are getting more tickets, I mean, you can ask that, and if they have the data, they have to give it to you. It's presumptively public is what our law is. And so unless there's a specific provision that says you can't get it, then you can get it.
And so all I do is send an email saying, this is a data practices request, and I want to know this stuff. I don't have to be a lawyer. I just word it however I word it.
Yes, it's free to ask to inspect the data, which means you usually, you know, go down there and look at it. They can charge you money if you want to ask for copies.
Tony Webster. TonyWebster.com is his website as well. Very interesting insight. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll have you back when your governance is up and running, and we'll talk more about this. I appreciate it.
Sounds good.